Speak, O Lord, your servants heareth. Amen. Please be seated. One of the most enjoyable and really most rewarding things that I get from, or I got from teaching in college or university, is the occasion to come into contact with students, particularly younger students who are on a campus perhaps for the first time in their life away from home. And very often the subject comes around to this: what should I do with my life? No matter what question you start with, so many of the questions for these students comes back to, what should I do with my life? It's a good question. It's a fair question. On that question, universities and colleges were built. The whole edifice of education, it's at some level, was there created to answer this question, or to help us answer this question. What should I do with my life? Nowadays, we have something called STEM education. You probably have heard of it. It stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And there's a great emphasis now in the United States, really around the world. Everybody's in competition to see who is going to create the next great scientific power to be delivered into human hands. Will it be China? Will it be Russia? Will it be Western Europe, United States? That's the big question. STEM education has become the dominant force in education today. Now, I have to say that a number of years ago, I worked for the World Council of Churches, and the project that I was working on had to do with science education. And we didn't have the term STEM back in that day, but we certainly knew what it was all about. And we were proponents, myself especially, really a proponent of more science, not less, but more science education in the schools. Well, you know the famous line, don't ask for, how does the line go? I've forgotten it myself. Careful what you ask for, because you just might get it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, I wish I hadn't asked for it, because now I've got it. And the STEM education has just taken over colleges and universities. One of the reasons that some small colleges can't make it is because, first of all, they were made for another era. But second of all, it's expensive. STEM education is expensive. You have to have laboratories. You have to have highly trained people, not just kind of traditional teachers and professors, but people really steeped deeply in STEM, in science, technology, engineering, and math. We know how to build things now. We know how to create things that just, you know, our parents would not have a clue what half of the things we talk about when we're talking about STEM. They say, what on earth are you talking about? The idea that you could go into a living person and intervene in their genetic makeup in such a way so that you can engineer the gene to do something different than what it had been doing for a billion years. And in the space of 35 years or so, we have given ourselves such power that we can, with a simple little trick, can affect the germline of a creature, including the United States, forever. One small change in a gene can be expressed, the whole idea is that it will be expressed on and on and on in the future. And the hope is that we can eradicate certain terrible diseases by intervening into the germline of a human being that has this terrible, any one of these terrible diseases, engineer it so it no longer can do the terrible things that it has done. Now that's important, but keep going with the question. What about the brain? How about we open the brain up and we start to implant certain capabilities in the brain that will go on forever. We can do it. The question is, we can do it, and we know we can do it, and we've set up our whole college university system to make sure we continue to do it. The one question we haven't asked and don't seem to be able to ask is what? Exactly. We can, but should we? We can, but why? It's an incredibly simple question, and yet I want you to know that at this very moment, I mean, next week I'm going to be going off with Christine to Amsterdam, and she's giving a lecture, and some of the most brilliant scientists in the Western world are meeting on a regular basis to ask questions, and Christine's job is in the sort of confronting all of these great scientists, just a minute. Where is the human in this? Should we be doing this? And the answer is it going to get rid of people suffering? Then we should do it. But what if we don't understand it well enough and that something only gets expressed three generations later? Yes, that can happen. And that kind of intervention, we can say so glibly, yeah, do it. It gets rid of suffering. And I'd be the first to stand in line. If it gets rid of suffering, do it. The problem is we don't know what that kind of intervention can do. And with our colleges and universities shutting down, there are fewer and fewer and fewer places where that question gets asked. The great scientists of our time are not necessarily in the university anymore. They're in privately run labs. And so the question is, should we? Why? And the very place where that question gets asked most thoroughly is in the place that we are losing, that is our colleges and universities. Now you can say, well, you're just sour grapes because you lost your job when your school closed down. And I imagine that's probably true. There are a lot of sour grapes. And you know what? I'm enjoying every one of them. The question, what should I do with my life, seems on the face of it a very safe, very legitimate, very important question. But I must say that now I am beginning to doubt its legitimacy. After years of working with students on that question, what should you do with your life, I'm now beginning to be suspicious that that's the wrong question. It assumes that we create our own life. Modernity demands that we be self-created. If you go back in the last 30, 40 years, you'll see quite a lot of writing about we are our own project. That is, the project isn't just out there, you know, to enhance food supply or increase health, the germs for healthy people. Instead, or we really are asking the question over and over again, or demanding to create our own life. That once seemed to be a revolutionary notion. Now I think it's retrograde. What do we do with our own lives? What do I do with my life? It assumes that I have something to do with shaping and creating my life. It assumes more fundamentally something very deep, and that is, it assumes that I am God. What should I do with my life? Means I can make my life? I thought that was God's province. I am now going to commit a heresy. It's a secular heresy. It comes from the Psalms, Psalm 100, verse 3, to be exact. And it goes like this: it is God who has made us and not we ourselves. It is God who made us and not we ourselves. This, in many places in the last, say, 30, 35 years, would be seen as so hyper-conservative that it will prevent us from going into the future. And yet, in fact, We are saying, when we say, how do I shape my life? How do I create my life? We are saying that we are the ones who have the power and the right to create our own lives. There's another way of putting it from, this is a Jewish source, a rabbi. It says, there's only one God, and it ain't you. He says, as far as Judaism is concerned, if you know that, you know it all. There is only one God, and it ain't us. The Bible teaches, again, in a different version, different translation, it is God who made us, and we belong to God. We are not self-led, self-created. We are not a project for ourselves. Like the disciples in the boat, we are called to be servants of Christ, even in our own lives. We are created by God and then called by Christ. For it is in serving Christ that our lives are shaped well, and not in serving ourselves. Amen.